and a very warm welcome to everybody. Today we're going to be exploring a really interesting topic where we're going to be looking at the impact of COVID-19 on consumer attitudes to digital payments. My name is Sophie Devonshire and I'm the CEO of the Marketing Society. And I'm so pleased that we're running this session and this discussion in partnership with our friends at Black Hawk Network. They're a great organisation which connects brands and people through branded payment solutions. And they're going to be sharing some of their expertise and some stories and statistics about how consumer behaviour has been transforming across the last few months when it comes to digital payment processing. It's a really important part of the marketing mix for anybody when you're looking at how your consumers pay, how quickly, how easily, and what the experience is. And it's been in flux for a while, with the patterns in these changes revealing quite a lot about how behaviours have changed the whole world over. So how will today work? First of all, we have a great speaker from Black Hawk, Chris Ford, who's going to be sharing his understanding and some insights around how consumer behaviours have been transforming when it comes to paying for goods and services. That will be followed by a panel discussion with two of his colleagues from the engineering and research side of the business, who are going to share some of their thoughts, mainly in response to your questions. So we'd love to make this session as interactive as possible. I know there's a number of you dialing in from different parts of the world today to talk about this and to learn about this. And it's really important to us at Marketing Society to hear from everybody who's listening. So what we'd love to do before we even get started is just to check that you're there and that the chat function is working and encourage you to come and say hello. The great thing about Zoom is you do have the chat function. So let's just check it's working. Perhaps those of you who are listening would be kind enough to come and say hello on chat, tell us where you're dialing in from. And how about telling me what was the last thing that each of you paid for with contactless? What have you been buying? What have you been shopping? Come and tell us and let us know what you've been spending your money in. Hi, Karen. What have you been buying with contactless recently and where are you dialing in from? Hi, Liesl. Groceries, very sensible, got to be done. Books, so easy to do, isn't it? Hi, Marie, you're buying coffee online, fantastic. One stamp, well, stamps, Paul, are very expensive these days, and train travel. Beer at the pub, perfect. Canoe paddles, well, that's what's so lovely about this. Everybody's been buying some very different things here. Hi, Nick, ooh, sausages. Using contactless payments and seeing what you spent them on. It's really good to hear from you. Let's use that chat function as we go, please, because it'd be great to hear your comments as we're speaking and as Chris is sharing his perspectives. We'd also like to hear your questions. This is a complicated subject. You may have some specific questions for the experts we've got in here today. Next to the chat function, you'll also see the Q&A panel. If you could post your questions as you go, what we're going to make sure we do is have plenty of time to answer them today. So we'd really like to hear from you. Anything that's on your mind, pop down the Q&A and let's hear from you. So I'm now going to hand over to our speaker and I'd like you to introduce Chris, who is the Senior Director of Incentives at Black Hawk. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Sophie. Great to talk to you again. Great to be part of the Marketing Society. So I'm really looking forward to hopefully what will be quite an interesting 15-minute presentation and then moving into our little panel session. So, hopefully everybody who's attending, thanks for taking the time out of your day. Should be an interesting 15 minutes. I will run at pace because we've got quite a lot to get through, but hopefully we'll get to the end of it with some really good insight for everybody.
It's brilliant. Thank you, Chris. And for those who don't know him, let me tell you a little bit about Chris and why he's particularly interested in this subject. Chris has had over 35 years experience in sales and strategic development, and he is responsible for leading Black Hawk Network's development and their growth in the B2B channels. And Chris, I know, has worked with some of the world's most recognisable brands across all kinds of different industries, including telecoms, utilities, financial services, automotive, manufacturing, and of course, retail. and he's been looking at new ways to help them reward, recognise, incentivise colleagues and customers. So thank you, Chris, for joining us. And without further ado, it's over to you.
Brilliant. Thanks, Sophie. Great introduction. And let's get started, because there's, as I say, quite a lot to get through. So to start the process off, let me just go through three agenda items that we'll cover today. So I'll talk a little bit about emerging payments and how they've now really and truly become payment solutions. I'll review a little bit about how Black Hawk have researched the market. We produced a How We Pay report, which I'll be covering off in terms of trends pre and post pandemic. And we'll finish with a few ideas on how different brands can then get engaged in this, what is now a payment revolution. So let's talk about a payment, emerging payments, and moving to payment solutions. So the different ways of paying have been around for many, many years. Android Pay emerged in September 2015. Apple Pay started in October 2014, and the original Google Wallet was released back in 2011. As we all know now, contactless payment is a normal thing for many of us to present at a retailer. And that actually started in September 2007, so some 13 years ago. But there was never a need to really adopt these preferred payment mechanisms. And therefore, emerging payments got sidelined to a certain degree. It needed a global event like COVID to create the inertia or need from consumers for it to really take off. According to the Bank of England, over £70 billion worth of notes were in circulation and continue to flow through our economy. That equates to about £1,000 per person. However, times are changing, and the second half of the last decade has seen cash usage drop year over year. Of course, there will always be a place for cash. It's quite nice occasionally to save up physically into a piggy bank that we're all familiar with to physically see those values increasing. Of course, in the world of card payments accounted for half of all transactions in the country for the first time. In October, UK Finance reported that card payments now accounted for half of all transactions in the country. In 2017, debit cards actually overtook cash as the most frequent used payment method in the UK. In recent times, due to the need instigated by the pandemic, of course, online sales have skyrocketed. Hundreds of millions more digital pounds are spent every day compared to last year. According to recent research by Nielsen, UK shoppers spent 678 million more on fast-moving consumer goods during May, with online sales accounting for a whopping 97% of this growth. In-store sales, in comparison, rose just 0.3%. And I'm sure we're familiar with the requirement not to visit retailer estates until very recently in our lockdown being released. When we look at July 2020, online grocery sales rose by 117%, achieving a record market share of 14% of all transactions. The Retail Gazette, a well-known online retail magazine, has commented that this is the most dramatic change of shopping behaviour we've ever seen. From the 1st of April 2020, the contactless limit was increased to £45. The average value of contactless transactions has grown from £9.28 to just under £14, while a total of 264 million has been spent on contactless payments above £30. According to a recent Barclaycard report, this means a total of 43% of in-store transactions between £30 and £45 are now contactless. In our How We Pay research report, which will be available to attendees of this webinar, before the COVID pandemic, there was evidence to show that 48% of respondents visited grocery stores on average 2 to 3 times per week. And 26% said the same for convenience stores. 10% said they visited either type of store every day. Post-COVID, and with the subsequent research that we did, it looks like frequency has changed dramatically. And most importantly, 46% of people now feel unsafe when shopping in physical retail outlets. We've seen a whole heap of retailers change the way in which they engage with the consumers that visit their stores. And the slide just shows just one example of the way in which people are adopting to this new normal. From our report, How We Pay, 74% of consumers are now interested in adding cash to a digital payment platform. Although only 30% say they already do this, this behaviour is most appealing to those under 34. 25% of 18 to 24 year olds say they already use digital payment platforms in this way. And there's been a swathe of a completely new market for what we've termed as value or fund disbursement. It's actually become a big thing. Charities, housing associations, key workers, vulnerable groups all require support by many of these organisations. Historically, these businesses or organisations have had little or no way of moving value around in a trusted, secure or frictionless fashion. So at Black Hawk, we've been at the heart of these initiatives in the UK for the past 6 months, and it's a market that's evolved based fundamentally on the need for people to receive funds. We've, as an organisation, globally helped multiple organisations disperse billions of dollars of funds specifically to support the people that need it most. Pre-COVID, this was a market we and others supported, but it was hugely smaller in both value and scope. I think it's fair to say that what was once a nice-to-have capability has now become mainstream. All the market indicators that we look at regularly as a business suggest it's here to stay. We are very much at the start of a payment solution revolution. So I'd like to start off with our first couple of poll questions, if I may. What we're going to particularly look at is processes pre and post COVID. So Kylie, if you wouldn't mind putting up the poll questions for me. So if you wouldn't mind just answering those, be fantastic to see some live results. Fantastic. So looking at the results that we've seen, so making a contactless payment, obviously more often for the majority of the participants, 76%. And how many times have you made a contactless payment since COVID? It's continued in the same vein. So in terms of frequency, people are starting to become far more frequent, moving towards once a week. So I think it's fair to say that the majority of people, in terms of payment behaviours, using what appears to be a new and efficient way of paying for goods or services, has started to become more of the norm for many of us. So the ability to engage and serve an audience, whether at the till point or remotely, has now been driven by a real and pressing need. A need to provide safe, effective, secure and consistent experiences on a continuing basis. More has been rolled out in the past 20 weeks than has ever been delivered in the payments arena. We now have fully tried, tested and adopted payment solutions. At Black Hawk, we wanted to look a little closer. How do people pay or wish to pay for goods or services? It was the principle of creating our How We Pay report that's a global study looking at every country that we are present in, 28 different countries, and considering how people have changed their payment behaviour. Something that's very important to look at when you're looking at a global report is to consider each country as an entity, particularly around the cultural traits that exist. So importantly, when reviewing global reports, there are historical cultural differences. If you look at America, 30% of the population use gift cards for their own purchases. There has always been concerns in the US around fraud, and there are a huge majority of the US population that are unbanked or what we term as underbanked. So the ability to use other payment mechanisms is crucial for them. Remembering that in the US, chip and PIN only become a normal process at the point of sale about three and a half years ago. So it was constant and continuous that you actually swiped your card through a card paper reading unit and then signed the chit at the end, similar to what we were doing in the UK some 10 or more years ago. So looking at different cultures, different usages, different approaches in different countries is really quite important. Taking a look at Germany, Germany latched on to the approach for gift cards for self-use many years ago. As with US residents, they remain somewhat skeptical about payment providers knowing who they are, what they shop for, and plus they continue to have concerns over security for their personal bank details. If we look specifically at the UK, the same lens thinking about how people pay and particularly the cultural aspects of the UK market. When you're looking at payment solutions, UK consumers from our report, it suggests that people are finally catching on to the concept of self-use payment solutions, whether that's buying and using gift cards or e-codes for themselves for everyday spend, or whether it's actually thinking about adding payment value to a payment container, like a wallet or some form of device payment. Reloadable grocery cards, as we all move towards looking to pay for food and the elements that we need every day, has become something that's used continuously through the market, and particularly when you're looking at the digital aspects of reloadable. It's driven fundamentally in the UK by three core reasons: a need to save, a need to embrace alternative payment solutions, and fundamentally a need to consider how you can get more value. So converting loyalty points or stored currency, doing DIY, or entertaining themselves and the family. Pre-pandemic, only 44% of people were interested in adding cash to a digital payment platform, and only 3% said they were doing so already. Post-pandemic, 74% of consumers are now interested in adding cash to a digital payment platform, and 13% say they now already do this. Consumers are now looking for new ways to add value to their preferred payment solution. Consumers are starting to favour suppliers that can offer a range of funding options, for example, loyalty points or value conversion into their payment container. The end-to-end payment experience will be a key battleground as we move into 2021. And at Blackhawk, we've reacted to the payment revolution over the last 2 to 3 years and are very proud now to be pivotal in terms of payment solutions on a global scale. So how we pay report highlights some notable trends from branded payment offerings. Gift card formats, whether physical or online, have seen an increase in usage of more than 15% during the pandemic. Physical branded increased from 44% to 65% usage. Physical use anywhere MasterCards, like our Pure card seen on screen, increased from 38% to 53%, and digital category cards like our One for All product increased from 37% to 53%. So I'd like to ask out another poll question, if I may. So with all this change and new consumer options for making a payment, let's ask a question about, has COVID affected the way you pay? So interesting, 60% say I'm about the same as I would pre-COVID, and 40% suggest that yes, and I will stay with this new way of paying. In research that we've done in the market, typically it's about two thirds, one third. So two thirds say yes, and I'll stay with this new way of paying. And about one third are fundamentally doing what they were doing pre-COVID, which could suggest that people were actually using payment solutions already. So more than payment evolution, this is rapidly becoming a payment revolution. For brands to take advantage, one of the things that we are very engaged with as an organization is providing different payment options. It's key and highly important that as a brand, you accept payments across channels. All consumers wish to pull their value into their preferred payment container. So loyalty points, offers, and so on, delivered via a frictionless payment mechanism. A range of brands are now actually adding their own brand to the payment vehicle. Many brands do this in physical or digital form, And it's a great way of getting value to your consumers or employees, where your brand continues to resonate all the way through to the redeeming the value or making the payment. Whether it's employees or consumers, the ability to engage using payment solutions has never been easier and more relevant. We know that happy employees very much equals happy customers and improved business performance. And that edict is about employees tell us that recognitions that happen frequently and form part of an ongoing business initiative had greatest impact. The government equally has introduced tax efficient payments, allowing organisations to pay up to £50 as a thank you, completely tax free, to each of their employees. Consumers want choice. They want choice about how they pay, what they use their value for, how the journey becomes frictionless, and most importantly, that the experience convinces them to come back time and time again. Payment solutions are becoming certainly a battleground in terms of creating loyalty. Importantly, you need to cover trust and security and user experience with whatever approach makes most sense to your brand. Pre-COVID, the most important factor in encouraging more people to use a digital wallet was convincing them it was secure. Need has lowered these concerns, but the brands that will win in the long term will be the ones that are seen as 100% solid whilst maintaining their level of innovation. And finally, need has driven us all to adopt new ways of paying. But how you decide to provide people with the experience of paying for your goods and services will certainly set your business apart from the crowd. Payment solutions are here to stay. The question is, are we ready?
Thank you so much, Chris. Wow, some really interesting perspectives and stats coming out from the research there. I was looking at the comments coming from attendees and thinking how important it is to be reminded of more general research, because I think as a couple of people said in the comments, you know, this audience here may not be particularly typical in terms of how they're looking at payment processing. But actually to see the full research and the fact that there is a revolution going on, not just an evolution, and that there's dramatic change there. And also to get that global perspective. I mean, I always think it's fascinating how different it is in the US versus here when it comes to how people pay. So thank you so much for sharing all that, Chris. Lots to talk about. And I'm sure there are lots of questions for people listening as well. Please do put your questions onto the Q&A that we've got below, and you'll have a chance to come on and ask Chris and also ask Paul and Stephen. I'm going to ask them now to join us. Two more panelists from Black Hawk Network. Hello, Paul. Hello, Stephen.
Hello.
Paul is the VP of Engineering and Stephen is the Head of Research at Black Hawk Network. So they bring two additional perspectives. Paul heading up a team of 200, I think more than 200 actually, digital and engineering professionals across 5 countries. And they help provide market leading business to business and business to consumer products and platforms which underpin the business. Stephen leads the insights team. So he's been looking at delivering the market research across a whole variety of business sectors. And I know, Stephen, during your time at Black Hawk, you've delivered both customer and consumer and employee surveys, but a mystery shopping and some retail audits for a number of top UK brands, haven't you? So lots of perspectives from you two as well. So can I start with you, Paul? As we've been listening to all that, there's Chris has mentioned a couple of brands and what they've been doing, and also the global perspective. For you, what are some of the best examples of what brands have done to react to technology globally recently?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a few really interesting examples. So one of our customers is Alipay. And in the US, we gave them a mechanism in Sephora to actually scan a barcode at the till and convert your Alipay wallet currency straight into that Sephora voucher so that you could use it in store there and then. So it became a contactless payment mechanism straight from your Alipay wallet. So that was one that I quite liked. And I think certainly something we're starting to see, particularly in the Far East at the moment, is the idea of scan to buy. So literally you could have a poster which has got QR codes on it representing different closed loop payment mechanisms. You can scan that from your phone, download an application and basically pay for that closed loop product there and then, and have that delivered into your email box. So there's definitely a lot of interesting things going on. Another one I would probably call out is tokenization of open loop and restricted access cards. So we're starting to see a lot more interest in virtual cards and also putting those cards into your wallet on your phone so that you can use those in store. You're muted, Sophie.
Of course I am. The time-honored tradition of always having one person who's on mute. some great examples there. Thank you, Paul. And Stephen, just thinking about the huge amount of research you've done on this recently, what for you was the standout statistic that either surprised or you thought was really, really important coming out of that?
Well, I think for me, it's the combination of two things within there with the deck that Chris went through there. So the stat of 74% of people now wanting to be able to load cash onto a digital wallet or a payment container, that's up when we surveyed before COVID. It was around 40-45% of people were saying that that's what they wanted to do. Obviously, it's not massively surprising that it's jumped because it's been forced upon people during the lockdown. But when you combine that with the fact that you've got now just under 70% of people are saying actually they're expecting to continue with the behaviours that have been sort of forced upon them, for want of a better phrase, during COVID, those two things I think back up the fact that there's no longer really emerging of payments. These are more sort of they're moving towards being standard payment solutions. So yeah, for me, that would be probably the standout piece.
So that shift from being emergent to just being part of what we know is part of
the fact that people intend to continue with it as well. And they're not just doing it out of necessity. They're doing it from necessity, but now that's sort of, it's led to them actually liking it and wanting to continue it.
That's brilliant. And just Chris, you know, of all the things you've been looking at, are there some things that you think brands have been doing particularly well that you want to highlight?
Yeah, I think I mentioned about value disbursement or fund disbursement as I presented, and there's a market that's just evolved. It was always there, but never in the value or scope that it is today. And, you know, some of the major grocers, people like Tesco's and Morrison's, for example, have actually stepped up to the plate and redefined the delivery of value to needing people. So we're all familiar with school meals, which obviously we, through Tesco and Morrison, supported in the delivery of school meals whilst vulnerable children were not in school. Other organisations have looked at how can I actually get my brand front and centre when I'm engaging consumers on a continuing basis to actually deliver what we refer to as branded payment or effectively a value disbursement. So you would have been familiar with things like insurance providers providing acquisition incentives for new customers. Aviva, Barclays, and Legal & General have recently used what is branded select code, so the digital code that you can then swap into your choice of high street content. So it's a question of pushing the brand that fundamentally is known for the services and goods that they produce at the moment and allowing them to use a payment solution as a mechanism for extending their brand and marketing reach. And we've found that to be certainly picking up through the last couple of years and really intensifying digitally in the last 6 months.
Yeah, just that it's an acceleration of things, isn't it? That's what's been happening this year.
Yeah, and I think it's a very good point, Sophie, when we look at the way in which emerging payments are now payment solutions, that would never have happened if we hadn't experienced the last 6 months that we've experienced. People have been now pushed with a need to adopt other ways of paying. And as Stephen quite rightly points out, many people are now saying, actually, I quite enjoy it. I quite like this approach. I'm going to continue with it.
Mm-hmm. being able to test it and move on to it. Now, I feel slightly like I'm monopolising you all, everybody, and I know that there are some great questions coming through from the audience. So what we're now going to do is actually invite people listening to come and be a bit more part of the conversation. So our team are going to be promoting some people out there who are listening to come on and join us. Now, if you are naked or you don't want to show your video, you don't have to show your video, people who are listening, but ideally we'd love to see you and for you to join the bigger panel here so we can have a discussion and ask some questions live. There's a few people who've put some Q&As through, so Bramwell and Amy, and what we'd love you to do is to come onto the screen and ask our panelists about it. So everybody, you will be being asked to join and be part of it because we like seeing everybody's faces and it makes it feel a bit more connected. But perhaps I could ask Amy first of all, Amy Walker, who's asked a really interesting question about slightly different types of organisations. Amy, what's your question for the panellists? But you'll have to take mute off.
Hi. So just to give you context, thank you, first of all, really interesting discussion. I currently am volunteering for an organisation called Banquet, who are trying to actually, in line with the payment solution revolution, trying to provide a digital transformation to the food bank ecosystem. So it's provided a safe way to donate and a much more efficient way during lockdown. Luckily they started last year anyway, because the need was there. The need has just again accelerated. So a challenge for us at the moment is to A, build trust and get the brand out there, but also how can we best, as a not-for-profit, capitalise on this payment revolution, and in order to acquire new audience sets and scale our donations?
Yeah, it's a topic that's not unusual, Amy. there's many organisations that need to disperse value. From our point of view, one mechanism for doing that is to curate a value associated to what you're giving away. Now, whether it's a cash value or a code value, producing that content in a branded fashion. I think you mentioned, was it Banqueting was the company you were?
Yeah, it's called Banquet, but yeah. B-A-N-K-U-E-T.
Okay, yeah, so using Banquet as a brand on the code or value that you're dispersing, when somebody receives it, they recognize instantly your brand and they become familiar with what that code is used for. So if it's then navigating to a food bank to collect food using a code, that code might be constructed with a certain value associated to it based on the individual that's receiving it. So depending on what your engagement model is, if there's a range of customers that have different needs from a food bank environment or from a food disbursement environment, creating a branded code which puts your code on the value and then allows the person to redeem it, whether it's at your site or possibly at an engaged grocer's site, that's certainly something that we do pretty regularly every day.
So what do you mean by code exactly? Like, how would I encounter that if I was someone who wanted to donate to a food bank? How would I encounter the code?
So I'm talking more about the redemption part as opposed to the fund deployment part. So if I want to
donate, need to partner with a brand and have...
If I wanted to donate, there's ways of incentivizing donations, but you have to be pretty careful in that space because it's very highly governed.
Yeah.
You're doing incentivizing. So the ability to incentivize people to recognize what your brand stands for, and more importantly, recognize how people can take advantage of the value that you're delivering by using payments is an approach. But that's certainly something for us that is a conversation to see where we can help.
And on the donation side, Amy, something that we're starting to see in the US is kind of cash-in solutions in big retailers. So basically, you would generate a barcode on your phone, hand over £10 or $10, and then that's going to a digital account, which could be your charity account.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, because we've got two options. One is that you can give on a one-off basis, just go online and donate 10, 20, however much, or the one we're trying to push is subscription.
Sure.
Actually, it's got that loyalty aspect as well, which would work really well.
But it sounds like there's a mix of understanding what the technology solutions are, but also and then this point of making sure it remains branded and it's an opportunity to communicate as part of it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you, Amy. Thanks for asking that. I'm going to invite Bramwell Johnson now to ask his question, partly because his question I think is quite interesting, and also because in the chat he was complimentary about my introduction. So, you know, thank you, Bramwell. And tell us, what's your question for the panel?
Well, thanks, Sophie. I am Bramwell Johnson. I'm from Propeller, which is PR Content Business Development. I'm actually doing some work at the moment on the evolution of payments. And I'm just curious to see what the panel's take is on biometrics. And I know it's a little bit science fiction and a little bit out there compared to the reality of the day to day. But you know, I just wondered if you had any take at all on biometrics, where they might be going, and even wildly, how brands might somehow be involved in biometric authentication and payments.
I can probably take a stab at that one, Bramwell. Thank you for the question. Yeah, I don't think we've seen much of it so far, to be honest. And you have such varying rates of adoption of even contactless payments when you're looking at it on a global basis, that I think we've probably got a little bit of a way to go. I do think it will come. We know what the timescale is for that, I really couldn't say. But at the moment, it's not something that we have seen a lot of, but it will be very neat when it's here.
Okay, are you keeping your feelers out? Are you monitoring developments out there?
I wouldn't say we are actively at the moment, because as I say, there's just such a steep hill to climb to even get people using contactless payments through phones at volume, depending in which country you're looking at. So I think there's probably quite a lot of development to do there before we start seeing any true kind of massive innovation around that. And somebody asked the question about kind of use of cash and, you know, how long will we see cash for? And I think there's probably quite a big correlation between that and the use of more advanced technologies, because as that starts to decline and we get past some of the laggards and people just start using devices more, I think that will be what will prompt the innovation there.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Paul. It's really helpful. Thank you very much.
That probably leads us into Chris Carr. I can see there's an interesting question there about those people who still prefer cash and how we change the behaviour around that. Do you want to ask the panellists what you'd like to find out about that?
I would love to. Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah,
right. You certainly can, Chris. Nice to see you, my Chris. Friend.
Hi, everybody. I should say I did used to work for Black Hawk Networks. So it's lovely to see you all again. Just interested on the sort of the cohorts that sometimes get left out of these things. More elderly customers, perhaps, who tend to be a bit more resistant to changing to those sorts of payment methods, contactless, obviously mobile phone payment, probably even more so. Is there any research or any kind of behavioural techniques that you can sort of suggest to your clients perhaps that might help overcome those barriers?
So from a research point of view, within this study, we didn't go too deeply into that, but the main barrier that came out for the people that were maybe the later adopters was sort of concerns around security. So if I'm going to be putting my money into a container elsewhere, is it actually going to be safe there? And I'm spreading my risk across lots more different platforms, so there's more ways to get at me. So giving people reassurance that's not the case was quite an evident one. And I think we can see in the jump amongst those, the groups that weren't really, it wasn't really resonating with pre-COVID, a lot of it, because they've been forced into doing at least parts of it during COVID, they're now discovering actually my concerns around security and not as they're not as founded as maybe I thought they were beforehand, and it's sort of pushing people into it. So from a from a behavioural point of view, it's quite interesting. We did some research over in Germany, ran some focus groups and some consumer research over there, and we've got a gift card brand out there called Dein Gutschein, which I believe there's someone on the call, we said they were from Germany, but the rough translation is your voucher, rather than, they don't call them gift cards, they don't think of them as a gift or just a thing to buy for another person. They are, it's a payment solution. And when we repeated that research in the UK for our One For All branded card that we have, you can see that people in this country are starting to come along that line, and there is still that barrier of it's called a gift card, so I can only use it as a gift. So there might well be some things in the semantics there going forward, how we actually position these things so people don't think of them as a single use item, but they can, that they are a payment method rather than just a gift that I buy for someone and
there was some really interesting stuff, Chris, that was done by NatWest actually, to act as a caring wrapper for elderly people that struggle to get out of home to shop. So instead of you as an elderly person, not that you are, but obviously an elderly person giving their own payment card to a carer to go and do their shopping for them, NatWest stood up a payment container that enabled the elderly person to effectively transfer a fund from their own bank onto the payment card, which one, limited the exposure, but secondly, completely controlled any movement of personal data. So the carer went to shop and shopped in stores using a contactless NatWest card, which was fundamentally for the elderly person at home. So the extension of people of an elderly age that maybe don't have a device that would work or a payment mechanism that would work is actually wrapping the brand, wrapping around that use case functionality that enables others to do it on their behalf.
Nice, that's great. Thank you, guys.
Just linking that to another question here, which is asking about the benefits and barriers in adopting mobile phone payments. I think that's actually a really interesting one, because if you think of the kind of two predominant ecosystems in the UK, so Apple and Google, they're kind of functional, but they don't actually add a huge amount of value. And there's a number of countries in the world where actually Google and Apple Pay simply aren't licensed. And what you've seen them come up with is actually much higher value add applications that will do things like allow loyalty points. They'll allow brands and retailers to put offers into the app, and then they're supporting NFC payment. So I think it would be very interesting to see where kind of Google and Apple take these things, or whether or not actually somebody else could come into the market with a very high value add application that would actually encourage a lot more use, because people are always, you know, what's in it for me? So if they're going to get loyalty points or they're going to get retailer offers, I think that becomes a lot more interesting, and that could see us kind of tip more towards those mobile phone payment methods.
It's a fascinating time, isn't it? Because there's opportunities for so many brands, but also so many financial service companies to be able to offer more of a relationship building experience at this point of purchase, and seeing who's going to take that on and who's going to be the ones leading it will be interesting. I can see there's also a question that's come through actually about how things are changing generally in terms of the banks. I don't know if you as a team have noticed a shift in terms of the use of traditional bank cards moving over to the more challenger ones, so the Revoluts and the Monzos and the Starlings of this world. Is that accelerating change as well?
Yeah, it's that's a fascinating subject in its own right. So high street banks, they've had their ups and downs, as we all know, some more secure than others, but fundamentally high street banks have been present and part of our everyday lives on a continuing basis. The reluctance for people to change their bank account is still very significant. However, the what I would term as the challenger banks have entered the market with in some cases with very specific propositions wrapped around their product. At the beginning of 2019, there was a transition towards challenger banks. So high street banks were definitely losing significant market share. What we've seen most recently in some research that we actually undertook for some of our largest banking clients is there's a transition back to secure, confident, trusted brands. And because some of those disruptor organizations, their core proposition, if you look at Monzo or Starling, in terms of their core proposition, doesn't resonate as much today as it maybe did when people navigated towards them, particularly about free FX, for example, on some of those cards. If you're not traveling, free FX is less relevant. And therefore, people have navigated back towards major high street banks. The challenge now is that a major high street bank has to step up in terms of innovation and next step capabilities, which isn't always easy because some of those banks obviously have huge infrastructure that they have to try and move forward with. But there's definitely a move towards disruptors and most recently a move back to high street.
A fascinating perspective. And you mentioned there the question of trust, which is always important generally with brands, but also when it comes to paying online. And Chris, you talked earlier about how the need for trust and security and confidence has always in the past held back emerging payments, but that now has shifted. Is there something in particular that's changed there, or is it just over time people have got used to paying online and contactless and there's more trust there?
I think there's a bit of a perfect storm that's happened, and that storm got very much bigger as a result of COVID. So the perfect storm was devices become more capable. More people started trusting the thing that was in their pocket beyond it just being a phone. Most of us on this call every day would spend many hours on our device, be very comfortable posting pictures, photos, information about ourselves. In some cases, probably of giving away too much data to some of the social media channels. But as a result, those devices have become part of our everyday life. And the shift probably started, in fairness, a couple of years ago, where people really started focusing on what else can I do with this device in terms of payment. COVID has then accelerated that thought process about what else can this thing do to help me. And as Paul mentioned earlier, different payment processes, not just a wallet, but maybe a barcode or maybe a QR code that could be scanned at the point of purchase, is now very freely accessible through that device. So the security, confidence and trust aspect has become less about the device and now more about the use case.
Mm. Yeah, and interesting you mentioned QR codes, because certainly in the UK, it's been fascinating to watch over the last few months, the acceleration of usage of that. I mean, I'm a big fan, anything that gets you what you need quicker, smarter and you know, a way of communicating at speed is very appealing. But that does feel like it's been quite a tipping point when it comes to QR codes. I know they've been massive in China for a long time, but suddenly in the UK, certainly they're taking off, aren't they?
Yeah, I think you're going to see more of it. So obviously a whole bunch of restaurants now are just forcing you to pay using a QR code at the table. I think you will see more of it. And as people get more used to it as an approach, we might see, I was going to say a resurgence, but I don't think we've ever really had huge amount of QR code use in the UK. But I think it could pick up. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the things we're looking at is basically a gift cardless gift card mall. So you can simply have a poster which has got QR codes on it. Those can then, you can pay on the device using an application and have that e-gift simply mailed through to you or use it in the application. So I think it's something that, you know, hopefully we'll see more use of.
Mm. Now I want to ask a question about predicting the future, which is always fun because nobody quite knows and it's hard to do. And Liesl McDonald, I don't know if you're there, Liesl, but and want to ask this question yourself, but to talk about cash and the future. Hey, Liesl, how are you doing? I'm going to come off mute and ask the panel your question about the future.
Yeah, I was just looking to flip it on its head and say, what role, 10 years from now, what role will money play in the financial ecosystem, given that people are adopting digital, and also concerns about the cleanliness of money and the fact that it transmits viruses and things quite effectively. So why would there be a need to have cash say 10 years from now? And if so, what would be the role that it would play?
Yeah, and I think I'll start off an answer to that, and I'm sure Paul's got a view as well. What we have to remember in society, there is a huge amount of people that don't have bank accounts. So their mechanism to actually pay themselves, be paid, is often driven by cash. So they're typically unbanked or underbanked in terms of their relationship with what we may class on this call as sort of normal society, that you have a bank account. So the need to service those people won't be going away anytime soon. So cash will always play a part in that ecosystem. There may be other alternative ways of dealing with people that don't have a bank account as such, but to deal with them, certainly in the next 5 to 10 years, it will maintain a constant. I went to an event 5 years ago about specifically the payment industry, and there was a chap there who was evangelizing the use of cash. And he walked up and down the middle of the theater with £5 notes, asking questions, giving £5 away. And he got more engagement from that audience because he was giving physical cash away than anybody who was delivering an eco to anybody. Now, 5 years on, we've moved on somewhat. The Bank of England saying that in the last decade, we've seen cash usage halve in the second part of that decade. You would imagine that that will continue to be the case, particularly as who are more technology savvy people become older and therefore use other devices more familiar to them. But I think for the time being, it will still exist for sure.
Sorry, I just wanted to add a comment to that, which was about in Africa and Asia, how there have been some technologies introduced to allow people to have and use wallets and cap cards and low-cost mobile phones because they don't have access to bank accounts. And I always think it's interesting to look at Asia, where I'm based most of the time, because sometimes those people who you might think of as being farther behind actually skip a couple of generations of tech and end up actually slightly ahead of us. Yeah. So in Thailand, they're using, way up in the boondocks, they're using cards with petrol value for people's mopeds so that they can put money in value into them, and they're given by their employers, etc. So we should maybe watch out in case those sort of unbanked people end up jumping ahead of us in the future, who knows,
and being the innovation inspiration. And again, it goes back to the point of actually looking at things from a global perspective gives us different ways of thinking about it and sharing the new ideas as well. Fascinating, isn't it? We're starting to run out of time, and what I wanted to ask Chris and Paul and Stephen, if they wouldn't mind, out of all the things we've talked about today, there's a lot going on for people. For those of us listening, as we think about how we build the customer experiences through payments in the future, is there perhaps one piece of advice that each of you would give us, one takeaway that we need to make sure we remember? And if you'd be kind enough to share that in the style of a tweet, so we're not here forever, but just the most important thing. Paul, what would it be for you, for everybody listening?
I think it's going to sound cheesy, but just basically expect more change. You know, I think what this looks like in 5 years' time will probably be completely different to how we're envisioning it now.
I make it there. And Chris, what about you?
I would say as simple as use payments as part of your marketing mix.
Yeah, it's a really important point. There's such potential there in terms of how you connect and compel people through it. And Stephen, what about you? What would you advise us to make sure we remember as we come out of this session today?
That come off mute first, sorry. I would, for me, it's a simple one as well. I think it's just don't second guess customers or consumers, because I think even from what Liesl was saying there, it's difficult to predict where the future is going to go. So listen to people and deliver what they want.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, as I'm listening to this today, I think it's pretty clear that it's not just emerging payments anymore, that there has been a revolution, and that thanks to what's happened this year, you know, they're firmly established as payment solutions for us all. But also, as I'm listening to this, there's a huge number of choices and different perspectives on it all. And none of us can have all the answers ourselves. So it's great to be able to access the insights and the research that you've shared with us today, everybody. Thank you so much to Black Hawk for doing that. For everybody listening, as Chris mentioned earlier, there's a report and some more learnings that we're going to be sharing with you after this session as well. So there's much, much more to come. I hope you found today interesting. Kylie's just about to share a quick, very quick feedback poll. So if you take 1 second, please, to give us the gift of feedback and let us know if you found today useful or not. A nice, super fast, quick question for everybody. So thanks for filling that in. And thank you, everybody, so much for being with us, for asking the questions and listening today. If you want to hear more about Black Hawk, we'll send out a message with some contact details for everybody here as well if you've got more questions, or you can see more at blackhawknetwork.com. And from a marketing society point of view, we've got even more inspiration and ideas planned for you coming up very soon. Please keep your diaries free on the 17th of September at 10 a.m. for something really special. If you're interested in hearing the stories and the insights from pace setters, we've got a really interesting speaker for you. Jackie Lee Joe is an incredibly fast-moving, fast-thinking, fantastic marketer who's worked in lots of tech-driven and communications businesses, including telecoms and the media. And most recently this year has been the CMO at Netflix. She's got some great stories to share, and we're going to be talking to her. She's going to be under the spotlight with the Marketing Society on the 17th of September at 10 a.m. So I hope you can all join us for that. And if you're interested in more global perspectives, so ideas from what and understanding what's happening right across the world, there's a very interesting Marketing Society global conversation coming up. So on the 30th of September at 1 p.m. We're going to be talking about 2021. Yep, 2021 is still going ahead. We can't stop it. It's going to be another interesting year, I'm sure. And for marketers planning what they're going to do in 2021, it's going to be quite challenging. And we're bringing together some perspectives from brave marketing leaders across the world to talk about how they are planning for 2021. And we'd love to hear from you and for you to join that conversation as well. Don't forget to follow us, please, on Twitter and on LinkedIn, so that you can find out what we're doing. And also don't forget to give us feedback and thoughts and ideas and perspectives. I'd love to hear from you all. Come and find me on LinkedIn and let me know how you found today and if this kind of insight is useful for you. It's only the start of a very, very big discussion around this area, I know, but I've certainly found it really, really interesting. And I'd like to say a massive thank you to Stephen and Paul for joining us, and to Chris for a great presentation with some incredible insights. Thank you very much, everybody. It's been really great. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in and listening. Stay safe, stay shopping safely, and we'll see you all soon. Thank you very much, everybody, and goodbye.